Learning about how you think. Next on Principles and Policies. Welcome to today's Principles and Policies. I'm your host, Barry Sheets, the Executive Director of the Institute for Principles and Policy. And along with me today is our co-host, my Vice Chairman, fellow analyst, and very good friend, Chuck Michaels.
And it's good to be back in here in the studio. You and I are face-to-face for the first time in a while. We've been doing a few more of these lately, no more Skypes. But we'll be back to Skype at some point really quick, I'm sure.
Well, you know, Chuck, with the warm weather and the more activity that's going on in the legislature, the more I spend time in Columbus. And also with the warm weather, the more I can spend time with you because of my pet allergies.
Yeah.
You see, Chuck's got a lovely, wonderful, big, furry, fluffy black dog that causes me to close up like a box when my allergies kick in.
And, yeah, Rufus the Wonder Dog. And we'll maybe one of these days we'll post a picture of Rufus the Wonder Dog, the 125-pound lap dog.
That's true. Well, today, ladies and gentlemen, we wanted to do a little special program, and actually we might do a couple of special programs. We thought that as a service to our listeners, we would help walk you through some fundamental concepts when we're dealing with worldview issues. You know, we hear about worldview all the time. We talk about it all the time on this program. But I think sometimes what we need to do is unpack those terms and those ideas, those concepts, so that you understand what we're talking about specifically and how we're thinking about it, and hopefully will help to sharpen your thinking when you engage with the worldviews. And as we're going to be talking about today, I should say Chuck's going to be talking about today, because this is mainly his program today, presuppositions, why we believe what we believe and how it impacts everything we see, hear, and do. Chuck, let's get into this.
Well, okay. First of all, let's just tell everybody we are basically skimming the surface on a very deep ocean.
Yes, that's right. Now, if you really want the deep end of it, you can come and hang out with us some evening when we're sitting back kicking around show ideas.
Let's suggest a couple of books. If you want to know how to use the techniques we're talking about in an apologetic sense, and really this is the only true way to do Christian apologetics, I would look at the book called Always Ready by Dr. Greg Bahnsen. That's Bahnsen, Dr. Greg Bahnsen. It is an approach to apologetics that once you master it, and it's really not hard to master, it is the only way you will want to do apologetics again. If you're familiar with the way of the master, they don't call it that, but that is essentially...
That's basically what it is.
It's presuppositional apologetics is what it's called.
Well, now we're using those big words, Chuck.
Yes,
so
right.
Presuppositional or presuppositionalism.
That's right.
Because if you're around pastors and theologians, they'll talk about that. And some of them will talk about it in positive terms, and some of them will talk about it in not so positive terms.
Oh, and by the way, if anybody's done Evangelism Explosion...
That's presuppositional apologetics.
That's also presuppositional apologetics.
If you ever did Dr. Kennedy's Evangelism Explosion, you were doing presuppositional apologetics.
Big word, presupposition. What exactly does it mean? Everybody has a presupposition. And to kind of tell you what it means, I'm going to give you an example. Let's say that you have a round piece of chalk and you've got a countertop that you know is slanted. And you put down that piece of chalk on that countertop, what's going to happen to it, Barry?
Well, unless you set it on its very end, it's going to roll.
Exactly. And the fact is, how do you know it's going to roll?
Because you, at some point in your earlier years, you might have come across the idea of the theory of gravity.
Gravity. Okay. That's kind of what a presupposition is. When you assume that a round piece of chalk put on a countertop that's slanted is going to roll in the direction of the roundness of the chalk, you have presupposed gravity. In other words, you thought about gravity, even though you didn't do it consciously.
And you may not have used the word gravity.
That's right. You didn't use it mentally. I'm going to set this down edgewise so that it doesn't roll due to gravity. You didn't do that. You presupposed gravity, and you said, I'm going to have to set it this way. And you did it. That is a presupposition. When you get up in the middle of the night and you sort of shuffle to the bathroom in the dark.
Let's not be talking about your private life, okay?
No, that's right. If you shuffle to the bathroom in the dark, you do it out of a fear that if you stub your toe on your wife's favorite doorstop, which is an old-style cast iron that sits right by the door.
It's going to hurt.
You have presupposed that if you stub your toe on that thing, it's going to hurt. And you are probably going to be dancing around in the bedroom attempting not to waken your wife and hoping that your toe isn't broken. Did you sit there and actually mentally go through that before you got up and shuffled to the bathroom? No, you pre-thought it. It's there in the back. It's always a filter that everything goes through, just like the gravity thing. If you know that if you drop an anvil, you better have steel-toed shoes on because it's going to fall on your foot. That's a presupposition. I think we understand more or less what a valid presupposition is. A valid presupposition is something that is going to happen based on what you know and is stuck back in the back of your mind, and it is a filter that you filter everything through.
So, sort of like, Chuck, just to bring it home here locally, that you know if we get any kind of precipitation whatsoever in the early morning hours, traffic's going to be a nightmare in Columbus.
That's a valid presupposition. Yes. Now, occasionally, is that wrong?
Possibly.
Yeah, maybe on a Sunday when everybody's sleeping in instead of going to church. But nonetheless, we can joke about it. But yes, that is a presupposition. You assume you leave early because you assume that you're going to run into traffic. You've made the presupposition that you're going to run into traffic.
That's right.
Okay. This is why presupposition is such a powerful tool and why you need to use it in an evangelism setting.
That's because everybody comes to the table with some presupposition. In other words, no one comes tabula rasa, as they would call it, blank slate.
Blank slate.
Everybody's slate is written on in some way. Ultimately, what they believe about themselves, about God, and about the interaction of all of those things, what we call worldview.
Yes, exactly. And when we've talked about Christian worldview, we're really talking about presuppositions.
That's correct.
All Christians are supposed to have, this is what is meant by that passage in Romans about making sure about the renewing of your mind. It is changing your presupposition to conform to the mind of Christ, okay? R.C. Sproul makes that very clear in much of his preaching and in teaching.
Even though R.C. would consider himself an evidentialist and not a presuppositionalist.
That's true, but the fact is that R.C. actually encloses that evidentialism inside a bracket of presuppositionalism.
That's right.
And with that, I have heard his statements on that, and I agree with him. Yeah, you have to present some evidence, because otherwise, how are you going to get people to change their presupposition if you don't show them that their presupposition is incorrect? But evidentialism without the presuppositions is useless, because facts rarely change people's minds. You never win an argument very often. Oh, let's say you never, but you very often don't win an argument with facts. You have to change the way they think, and this is what the whole renewing of your mind is about. Okay. Is there such a thing as an invalid presupposition?
Yes.
Yeah, very good.
and honestly, and I'll just be quiet, I'm biased about this, it's any presupposition that goes against what I presuppose. Those are all invalid.
And which is, unfortunately, one of our frailties as humans is that we presuppose that all our presuppositions are correct.
Are absolutely correct.
Now,
that's right.
The sign of an open mind is when you can be convinced by the renewing of your mind that you have been incorrect in the past. And believe me, I've had lots of mind-changing experiences in my Christian life.
And this is why apologetics training is so important and vital in the church, because the most frightening, the most terrifying, the most unnerving thing for a non-believer is to come face-to-face with the truth of the living God. Because it blows away the presuppositions that there is no God. It blows away the way they've constructed the entire edifice of their faith in their life by getting down to the foundation, getting down to what the core kernel of what they truly believe, and showing them that kernel is rotten and will never bear fruit.
And that's a perfect example to lead into where I'm going to go with an example of an invalid presupposition. Okay, what would an invalid look like? Well, let's give an example. Recently, many of you probably saw this in the newspaper, on the net, it was every place. There was a report that abortion is up to 17 times safer than a full-term birth. Well, that is a very revealing headline, and the stories that I read were very revealing about the presuppositions of the person who wrote it and the people who did the study.
Yes.
And drew the conclusion. Now, first of all, we have to look in that those almost all of them was the word safer. Okay.
Safer, yes.
Now,
which is a loaded term.
That's right. Let's look at the equivocation of the word safer. And there's a reason that people felt they could equivocate on the word safer and make it seem like what it wasn't. Now, basically, safer, the implication of that word is that fewer people are harmed or killed by abortion than in a full-term birth. And there are implications of this that are invalid presuppositions.
Yes.
That is that no human lives are lost in abortion.
Well, we know that not to be the case.
Okay, we know for a fact that at least 50%, and the numbers are actually higher for a couple of reasons, but at least 50% of the people in an abortion die.
That's right, and it could go higher because you might have multiples.
Multiples, and sometimes the mother dies. Yes.
That's right. But at least if you have at least one child gravitas in the womb, when that woman goes in to have that child terminated, one out of two people that go into an abortion don't survive it. So with a 50% kill rate, that's pretty...
Right.
The word safe starts losing a little bit of its luster.
Well, if you read the stories, basically what they said was X number of women die per year during birth. Okay, and the implication was, okay, if you had said it's safer for the mother to have an abortion than a live birth, you might have a point. Because I would say that there are still a few women every year who die in childbirth for this reason or that reason, or are maimed. But then again, there are also women who are maimed and die from abortion. So we'd have to look at that.
Well, and the other thing that you have to be careful with data and statistics like that is that oftentimes the women who whose lives are snuffed out by abortion don't die on the table.
Oh, that's correct.
They die of the infection
days or weeks later. Yeah. Yeah,
but it's a terminal result of that particular action, which never gets reported as that.
It's sepsis, usually, is
right.
What kills
exactly.
Them.
So that doesn't get reported as an abortion death. So even those data regarding women dying in childbirth versus abortion, I don't think that study can make that claim and say safer with any degree of certainty.
I have a female acquaintance 30 years ago who basically had to rush back to the hospital because of a botched abortion. Don't worry, this had nothing to do with me. I was merely acquainted with the person. But that sponge was left in.
Ah.
And 3 days later, she was on the verge of death. Yes. 104 fever and that kind of thing. So that kind of thing does happen. There are two major presuppositions that underlie that presupposition. That's one of the things about presuppositional thinking that you have to realize is that sometimes under your presupposition are even more presuppositions. And unfortunately, we are short on time. So what we're going to do is we're going to continue this discussion tomorrow. We're going to talk about what the underlying presuppositions. Don't worry, we'll bring you back up to speed on what we were talking about. But we're going to talk about tomorrow more presuppositions. Again, let's talk about that book. If you want to look into presuppositional apologetics, it's Always Ready by Dr. Greg Bahnsen. He has written extensively on presuppositional thinking. He's written another excellent book called Pushing the Antithesis, which unfortunately we don't have either one of those books available. We probably ought to think about buying some and having them available, but we do have them available through our Amazon store.
That's right.
So if you go out to www.principledpolicy.com, you can press the button at the top for the Amazon store or at the side for the Amazon store. And I know that Always Ready is out there. I'm going to put Pushing the Antithesis out there, but you should familiarize yourself with those. In any case, join us tomorrow for another Principles and Policies where we will continue this discussion.